Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Lawrence Douglas, a professor of law, jurisprudence, and social thought at Amherst College. His most recent book is The Right Wrong Man, John Demjanjuk and the Last Great Nazi War Criminal Trial. And he has an article at The Guardian, How Will Donald Trump Respond to the Russia Investigation? Welcome to Background Briefing, Lawrence Douglas.
Oh, thanks, Ian. Always glad to talk with you.
Well, thank you, Lawrence, but we already know how he's responding. He's trashing George Papadopoulos, who he once said was an excellent guy, and now he's calling him a liar. So that's the M.O.
Well, I mean, it's the script that Trump always follows, so there's nothing surprising about that. I mean, it's certainly, I mean, we've seen it before that he can praise a person to the sky one day and then turn around and bury the dagger in the back and engage in the kind of worst sort of libel and personal attacks on a person. At least he didn't mention Papadopoulos's height.
Right, or his
we have some things to be grateful for.
Right, or his Cypriot origins or anything.
Yes, exactly.
But what Papadopoulos has brought to the table is such an echo of that meeting that took place in Trump Tower with the Russian lawyer Veselnitskaya and a bunch of other Russian intelligence people. This looks like the approach that he made to the campaign, and we don't know how far it went, but we know that in April they were talking about with this intermediary, this Maltese so-called professor who works for the FSB, that they had all of this data, which was later dumped several months later by WikiLeaks. So it's hard to believe that the campaign didn't use that stuff in the interregnum.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, it's, I mean, you have this this conversation that Papadopoulos has with this professor in April of 2016. Of course, the meeting at Trump Tower takes place then in June 2016. And, of course, also kind of connecting the dots with the way Mueller's investigation is unfolding. We, of course, know that Manafort was present at the June 2016 meeting. And of course, the other thing that's interesting to speculate on is inasmuch as Papadopoulos has pled guilty to lying. So in that sense, you know, I suppose Trump is accurate. He is a liar. I mean, he confessed to that. But it will be very interesting to find out, as I guess we will in the coming days or months or weeks, what kind of information he then supplied. That is, what kind of other contacts that he had. I mean, presumably he made a plea deal and then presented Mueller with other... He spoke to Mueller. I mean, he presumably spoke to him at length.
So he's obviously... Mueller is going to question Sam Clovis.
Yes,
who Papadopoulos reported to and who suggested he go off to meet with this Russian FSB asset, the Maltese professor, who's not, in fact, a professor.
The professor in scare quotes.
Right.
My favorite type of academic.
You mean your competition?
Yes, exactly.
So, it's obvious that when you look at this laundry list of crimes of the indictment of Manafort, it lays out, it's just extraordinary. And I talked to a Swedish diplomat who knew him very well in Ukraine and has followed him quite closely and is very, very well informed. And it's just breathtaking what a crook the guy is. And, of course, that flies in the whole face of draining the swamp. If anybody epitomized the swamp, it was Manafort.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole notion that we're going to, I guess there are all sorts of great ironies with respect to the claims that Trump made about the presidency and the reality of that presidency. But certainly the draining the swamp is one of, it's in that top 10,000 ironies of, statements that no longer seem to be kind of an accurate reflection of reality. I mean, Michael Flynn, all these people, I mean, they're kind of walking toxic Superfund sites.
Well, it could get worse, though, in terms of indictments against Manafort, in as much as, again, Anders Aslan, who had on yesterday, the Swedish diplomat who knows him and spent an awful lot of time in Ukraine, particularly during the time when Manafort was there, He made the point that Manafort stuck with Yanukovych, Putin's guy, way past everybody else had ditched him. But he stuck with him all the way through, and all the way through his eventual, you know, people power coup against him. And
right.
By the end, Manafort was about the last person that Yanukovych had, literally talking to him. Manafort was there when Yanukovych's special forces bodyguards opened fire on the crowds and killed about 140 Ukrainian citizens.
Right. Also bear in mind, of course, that Manafort is probably helping to agitate people to, you know, throw stones at, like, American soldiers.
Right, but if somebody can look into that, then he's got real blood on his hand, apart from being a mega crook.
Right, no, certainly. Certainly that's the case. Though I do think that, Mueller is probably trying to throw the book at Manafort, not because he's, in the first instance, interested in prosecuting him for these crimes. He's interested in flipping him. And that's why I think it was also telling that the Manafort indictment is revealed precisely on the same day that Mueller announces this plea deal with Papadopoulos, because I think one signal that sends is to Manafort that here we're playing real hardball with you. We have you in a very, very difficult position, and but talking, cooperating pays its dividends, and I think that's really what they're trying to do, is to try to flip him.
And again, I'm speaking with Lawrence Douglas, who's a professor of law, jurisprudence, and social thought at Amherst College. His most recent book is The Right Wrong Man, John Demjanjuk, and The Last Great Nazi War Crimes Trial. And he has an article at The Guardian, How Will Donald Trump Respond to the Russia Investigation? But there is clearly, apart from the fact that there's a lot more probably that you could nail Manafort with, and I'm sure he's trying to flip him, but based upon what Manafort's lawyer said yesterday, it almost seemed like out of the gate, Manafort's lawyer was representing Trump. And the first thing he said was, you know, this just proves that Donald Trump is innocent. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But
right.
But so in these cases, who pays the lawyers? And I believe Manafort's run up a massive bill and he's kind of broke. Do you think the one person who I think has already been flipped because he's so silent is General Flynn, Michael Flynn.
Yes, that's probably true. And in the case of Manafort, it's very difficult to predict his behavior. I mean, as you point out, it's possible that if Trump supporters or people close to Trump are paying for his legal fees, that creates its own kind of loyalty. On the other hand, if what he's looking at is, regardless of the quality of that lawyering, he's looking at a very, very substantial prison sentence, then I think his gratitude towards the deep pockets paying for his legal fees, I think that gratitude will be pretty shallow.
Well, isn't he looking, I mean, let's face it, that indictment, what they say, you can indict a ham sandwich. In this case, based upon that indictment, this guy is toast. He's going to spend decades in
prison. Yes, that's prison. What he's looking at, right? Unless he works out some kind of deal.
Right.
So, and again, that's the thing that, I mean, in a sense, that's kind of exactly a prosecutor's dream. I mean, they want to have someone in that position where they say, look, either you're spending a good deal of your natural life in prison, or you cooperate with us.
And that's already happened with Papadopoulos.
I mean, clearly with Papadopoulos.
Yeah, and again, he's only facing, I think, 5 years.
That's right. In his case, he wasn't even facing a substantial nothing, right, like the kind of prison term that Manafort's looking at. And nonetheless, Papadopoulos saw the light.
So isn't there a strange kind of coincidence here between sons-in-laws and father-in-laws? We know that Jared Kushner has, when he was courting Ivanka, in order to impress her, he bought this ridiculous building, 666 Fifth Avenue, way overpriced just before the market, Wall Street, crashed in 2008. He has a $1.2 billion balloon payment due at the end of next year. He's not going to make it. He's using his office, by the way, running around the world, raising money from MBS, his buddy, the boy king in Saudi Arabia, and shaking down other people for money. There's a whole other story there. But the point is that if you look at what Jared is doing vis-a-vis his father-in-law, who, it's very much a mirror of what happened with Manafort. Manafort was pretty much broke. because he lost Yanukovych. And then he apparently, all this money that the Russians loaned him, etc., somehow he went through that largely because his son-in-law out here in Los Angeles got into real estate and apparently is, you know, a crook and an incompetent, which I think is pretty much the case with Jared as well. And apparently Manafort had to bail his son-in-law out because, you know, the son-in-law, you know, ripped off Dustin Hoffman and a bunch of other people out here for millions of dollars. It seems so like we're talking about crime families, the Trumps and the Manafort's, for God's sake.
And it adds a whole different wrinkle to the notion of the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, because in this case, the apple is the son-in-law instead of the son. But it is very interesting how those kind of strange ties of corruption now seem to extend across families.
Right, and Jared just had a secret trip to Saudi Arabia to meet with his buddy MBS, supposedly to solve the Middle East peace, which, in case you hadn't noticed, has been lots of ships have run aground on the shoals of those expectations.
Oh, now, Ian, I'm sure he's going to solve that in the next few days.
Right, but what I was going to mention is that he took along his brother, who runs the family real estate company, the ones that have got the $1.2 billion balloon payment looming. So that would suggest to me that they weren't necessarily talking about Israeli-Palestinian peace, but they're talking about how to get someone to bail them out with deep pockets.
Right.
But back to Manafort, what's your sense then? Just preceding you, I was speaking with Jason Stanley at Yale. He wrote the book, How Propaganda Works. And clearly propaganda is working. We are in an alternative universe. You and I are in the reality-based universe that Trump derides all the time as fake news. He's doing incredibly well with his people who believe him and don't believe anything that the mainstream press do. And you do have a shocking situation where from the White House podium, you have a public servant who our tax dollars are paying, lying with absurd, ridiculous, transparent lies. You have Fox News lying. You have Sinclair lying. You have Limbaugh and the whole chorus of them lying like crazy and trying to pin everything on Hillary Clinton. And it is apparently working in their universe. So in the showdown between the reality community and the Trump bubble, who's going to win?
You know, it's a fascinating question because, you know, I do think that on some level, assuming that Mueller is able to build a very substantial case that shows, if not active collusion, then at the very least that Trump engaged in obstruction of justice. That seems like the clearer charge, at least in at this stage of the game, though it's certainly very possible that his son and other close confidants, if not he himself, engage in collusion. But if he builds a very strong case, then I really do think that we're heading towards some kind of, you know, real constitutional crisis, because I don't see Trump permitting that to go forward. I mean, he's going to do something. We know that his instincts are to engage in, you know, tenacious gestures of self-preservation and to always go on the attack. And that's just who wants to think about that? Who wants to kind of think about that kind of constitutional crisis, especially when it will, you know, come down to these invertebrates in the Republican Party to ultimately check him in his campaign to undermine our entire 200-plus year constitutional order.
So do you expect then an attempt, or actually he doesn't have to attempt, he's got the power to pardon Manafort, he can do it preemptively, as he did with Sheriff Arpaio?
Yeah, I don't even know if the pardon is going to work, you know, because one thing that is interesting, and this goes back a little bit to the point that you're making about the multiple charges that Manafort is facing, it's also possible that Manafort could be indicted on state criminal charges rather than just federal criminal charges. And Trump's pardon power does not extend to state charges. So, you know, who knows if the state charges actually, how they would be coordinated with the Mueller investigation. So it's hard to actually figure that out. But my concern would be less with the pardoning of Manafort than with, you know, he's described Mueller as engaged in a witch hunt. And, you know, if he continues to have his base believing it's a witch hunt, and if he feels that the circle is tightening, I could easily imagine him some point, even though it would be, we're looking at kind of a world of hurt, of firing Mueller.
Well, let me just quote from your article in the Guardian, Lawrence Douglas, how will Donald Trump respond to the Russia investigation? Just at the end here, you sum it up. This is a president who has been called an effing moron by his own Secretary of State. He's been accused of having the discipline of a spoiled toddler and being so intemperate that he could trigger a nuclear war. Charges that come not from the people's enemies in the mainstream news, but from within his own party and administration. Now, while that is absolutely true, it goes back to my earlier question, is what is going to break that bubble? If Trump supporters, we know they won't believe anything the mainstream press says, but why don't they believe what people who have interacted with Trump on a daily basis trying to tell us? Why won't they believe that? And at what point will they believe it? And finally, what will it take for them to believe it? Do we have to see the PP tape?
Yeah, exactly. It's something like that. I mean, I do think it is something where, I guess one thing that we should also point out is at the same time that he seems to be able to draw on the support of a base that is willing to support him in the face of overwhelming evidence of malfeasance, incompetence, absolute unsuitability for performing the job of president. The other thing I suppose to point out is this is an incredibly weak president, you know, by historical standards. I mean, he is not someone who can draw upon, he can draw upon the support of this fervid base. I'm just not sure that that's going to save him in the long term, but at the same time, I'm also not sure that his removal would that we'd be spared some kind of really, really, really ugly constitutional crisis if we were to move in that direction.
Right, and if he were removed and it wasn't absolutely ironclad, then he'd be running around the country fomenting revolution. So,
of course, exactly. Yeah. Him and Steve Bannon.
Well, Lawrence Douglas, let's keep in touch here and hope for the best. I thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Douglas, who's a professor of law, jurisprudence, and social thought at Amherst College. His most recent book is The Right Wrong Man, John Demjanjuk and the Last Great Nazi War Crimes Trial. And he has an article at The Guardian, How Will Donald Trump Respond to the Russia Investigation? I'm going to take a brief station break. We're back assessing the overwhelming evidence now apparent that Trump's chief of staff, General John Kelly, is not containing Trump, but is rather completely compatible, if not much further to the right, than the spoiled toddler he supposedly has under adult supervision.